and they're really good about
get started.
Outside doctors, as long as they do accept cards.
I did already. I pushed the button. Okay. All right, well, we'll get started here. I want to welcome everyone to the August 24th, 2022 regular meeting of the Port of Kingston Commission. Comments from those in attendance will be allowed upon recognition of the chair. Please identify yourself by stating your name. If you would like to be added to the agenda for a future meeting, please contact the port office at least 1 week prior to the regularly scheduled meeting. Please submit your documents and or presentations at the time of your request. We have a preliminary agenda before us. I would first like to call the meeting to order. And if we could stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. Well, I've had a chance to flip through the agenda. I think we've got everything here. I entertain a motion regarding said agenda.
Can I request one change?
Oh, did you? Yeah, do you have
one? Could we put for discussion items move mortgage rates up to 7% and the industrial development district down to E?
Oh, okay. Just switcheroo those?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't see what that's
about. Yeah. And then one other thing was to amend number action item 6C to read instead of negotiate to execute.
Okay.
Because we did get the actual agreement. I just got it late before I could submit it.
Oh, right. Okay.
Thank you.
Very good.
Make a motion to adjourn the agenda, to approve the agenda as amended.
Very good.
I second that.
Excellent. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, I've made notes to that. Okay. All right, let's move into it. We have a public comment section right now, and I believe that we have a couple of members of the public here with us tonight. We have Ron and Rita Nicholson. You folks have any comment at this time, or are you just watching?
Just watching.
Okay. Okay, very good. Well, we'll have another opportunity later on in the meeting if you want to make any comments. Okay, let's see here. We have item number five then, the consent agenda. Consent agenda, these matters are routine and will be enacted by one motion of the commission with no separate discussion. If discussion is desired, that item may be removed from the consent agenda by a commissioner. We have three items under consent agenda. A, approved July 20th, 2022 regular meeting minutes. Item B, approved July 25th, 2022 Kitsap All Ports meeting minutes. And C, approved July 2022 warrants and EFT payments.
I move to the consent agenda.
I'll second that.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Excellent. Very good. Okay, action items. We have item A, approved resolution 2022-08-24-01 to adopt the 2023 Endurance Washington Insurance Renewal for 2022 to 2023. And I think what we like to do, Greg, do you want to walk us through that?
Sure. So annually, the port reviews its insurance coverage by the end of April. During the first quarter, staff reviews the plan internally and also with Enduris, which is the name of our insurance risk pool. Enduris has submitted the adjusted invoice to renew our coverage for the period of September 1st 2022 through August 31st of 2023. The total amount for coverage for the updated list of assets has progressed to $133,312 for this coming term. The increase for the next period is $10,762, or about 8.8% increase. Our cash reserves can handle this charge of $133,312, and at this time, staff is requesting commission approval to renew our insurance coverage with the Bureau.
Very good.
Any questions or discussion? I do. Greg, what was the increase last year? Do you remember?
It was, I have it here, I just have to do the math. It was about $14,000.
Yeah, I thought it was more than it is this year.
And so it's predicated mainly on claims and or the reinsurance market. Our claims are dropping, basically. You know, so as we go through time, they use the last 10 years for your run-loss claim report, and that's what it's based on. So as we go forward, the best way to keep your insurance claims low is to have no, you know, your rates low is to have no claims. Mm-hmm. The reinsurance market has been really tough, very hard for everybody globally, right? Yeah. So that's a kind of reflection of just the overall insurance market, but also a reflection of not a real aggressive increase. Some, I think they go up to 10 to 12% for some clients, and we're at 8.8%, so not bad.
Right.
Thank you. Any other questions?
I would move to approve resolution 2022-08-2401.
I'll second that.
Very good. We have a motion to approve. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Excellent. Okay, item B of action items. Approve resolution 2022-08-24. -02 to approve purchase and installation of an HVAC system in the port admin building. Great.
Yeah, so the HVAC system in the port office building is failing and is largely inoperable at this point. We spent about $4,000 just in the past couple of years trying to keep it going. At this point, we simply need to replace it. Tori Grant, our maintenance manager, has researched options, and the result is this request to install a new HVAC system, and this would be for the whole building for an amount not to exceed $24,500.
Excellent.
I make a motion to approve resolution 2022-08-2402.
I second that.
Very good. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. I can attest, being a recent visitor down there, that it is hot as an oven in that lower office especially. It's not good. Okay, and now, so moving on to action item C, approve resolution 2022-08-24-03. To direct the executive director to execute an interlocal agreement with the Port of Friday Harbor related to dock design and construction. And Greg, do you want to go over that?
Yeah, so you know, staff would like to partner with Port of Friday Harbor to develop a dock configuration for the RCO grant that funded the creation of additional guest moorage. This ILA would pave the way to this partnership, and basically, we toured Port of Friday Harbor at the Executive Director's Conference, and they showed us their whole, they have basically one of their marinas, they've redeveloped it themselves. They ran into the same challenges that everybody runs into, and that's really expensive costs for contracting it. They thought they could try it themselves and see how it works, and it, they have a really great result. And so we would like to enter into an ILA, and then we will actually come forward again for later on after with a contract, because it would be in excess of my signatory authority.
Right.
But this would allow us to pave the way to proceed forward.
Mm-hmm.
And they can do design and construction of the arena for us on our behalf of those sections.
That's fantastic.
Do you have a sense of the timing, like how long it would take to do? Are you looking at doing it in sections? How would you anticipate that?
When I asked them, they said they can probably do about 100 lineal feet a week, and that they could probably, I think, and they felt like they could secure all the materials quite quickly. They're actually engineers, civil engineers, so they've done the design, so it might not need much of a modification at all based upon their current design. So I'm hoping they could execute it within a couple of months. We have to issue a purchase order, get the specification, get the scope of work, which is all an attachment to the interlocal agreement. But
the thing I understand about it as well is that this has already been permitted by oversight agencies, Fish and Wildlife, and Army Corps, I assume, et cetera, and so forth. And it sounds like the savings are significant.
Yeah, it should be a very, very competitive product, but I think it's fully vetted. They're exceptional engineers, so yeah. I think they want, and it's also a product which they feel has a very, very long life. They felt it's going to be a 30 to 50 year product, but it's also easy to repair. And we talked about having Mark and or Tori or go up and actually tour, and they'll show them how they fabricate it and how they service it.
That's awesome.
So what areas are you looking at replacing?
It's for the guest dock RCO grant. So it's new moorage, but just for the guest dock.
So is there potential for it being extending to other docks if needed?
That would be the idea.
Down the
so
road?
We vet this and see how if we really find it to work really well for us, then we could proceed forward on that concept. That's kind of the hope, actually.
Right.
And then would the work not begin until after the height of boating season?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
that would be enough for this boating season, right?
I don't think.
Yeah.
I don't think so. They have designs. They sent them all over to us, but we have to vet them to make sure. We could be pretty quick. I don't know. He said they're manufacturing for themselves, as well as a couple other people. So he said I'd have to just see when you were ready to execute that, see where you fall in line.
I think it's probably important to not do it until the height of the season has passed.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they could. Yeah, exactly. We won't get it installed, but they could be manufacturing it anyway.
Yeah.
But they won't get it installed.
Yeah, I think it would be really good for Tori to go up and see it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Definitely.
Well, I move that we approve resolution 2022-08-2403 to direct the executive director to execute an interlocal agreement with the Port of Friday Harbor related to dock design and construction.
Second that motion.
Very good. And all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Excellent. Okay. Okay, on to discussion items. We're flip-flopping this around, and I think we're going to moorage rates discussion.
Okay, so 3 years ago, the port kicked off an effort to move our marina rates toward a market-driven rate structure. This effort continues to help position the port to ensure we have necessary funding for repair and replacement of the marina assets. We are not there yet, however. The initial three-year adjustment broke the increases into three equal parts that would move the rates toward the average moorage rate for each slip length from our sample data from about 50, 60 marinas. This year, we need to make a recommendation to the commission for this next year and possibly beyond. As part of that due diligence, we have asked Paul Sorensen, principal of BST Associates, to present some of his thoughts and findings about the market for moorage, given his widespread knowledge across virtually all marinas in the Puget Sound, and also because of his intimate knowledge of the Port of Kingston and its history. With that, I turn the floor over to you, Paul.
And thanks very much, Greg. My pleasure to be here. Am I okay right here?
I think so, yeah. I think everyone can see you.
One second, I'm getting ready
Okay, well, this is just kind of an open discussion of marina rates. We've been working on that, as we did for you a few years ago, with a number of ports. And the situation, just in a nutshell, is that most marinas were built 50 years ago, 60 years ago. Construction costs have increased greatly. I'm real curious to hear about Friday Harbor and what they can do to bring that down. We just did some work in Des Moines for the city rebuilding their marina, and rates were significantly higher than we thought they would be in construction for slip. And what's happened with that is that rates haven't increased enough to cover operations and maintenance costs and to create a reserve fund for capital replacement. And that's happening everywhere. It's happening not only for mooring slips, but it's happening for upland facilities, restrooms, building space, seawalls, dredging, breakwaters. And it's really critical as stewards, I think, to make sure that there's the capacity to take care of that facility and to make sure that it's in the best shape. So with that in mind, I've got a couple of things I'd like to go through. The first one is the state of the boating industry. And I want to take a look here just in a minute about trends in boating and marina occupancy and then the future outlook. And then some of the different strategies that are being used right now to set rates, and then some of our preliminary findings. So this is the first one here. This looks at new boat sales in Washington State, most of which are in Puget Sound, and it looks from 2003 through mid-year 2022. The orange line is full year, and the black line on the just below it is half year. One thing to note is that boating and buying boats and using boats is discretionary, and it's really sensitive to what happens. So you can see how we grew during that bust period before the recession in 2008. We were adding 517 boats per year that were 26 feet and over. And then we hit the wall, and it continued to decline much faster and harder than most of the rest of the economy did. So we went down to 144 boats, but we didn't reach bottom until 2011, 2012. And since 2013, we've had almost every year the growth year. So we're up on average through 2021, 309 boats. Now these are new boats. I like to think about that as you've got an inventory of boats. Some of them are being removed from the inventory. There's little detail on that, but we look at registration, so it's boats that are registered. But you know, you've got boats that are derelict, as well as boats that people just don't use anymore, whether they're licensed or not. The new boats really is the biggest source of an increase in that inventory. And when we were doing 500 boats a year, just think of that in your marina, and I'm blanking right now on how many slips you've got.
About 300.
300? Okay, so it would be, if all of those came here, you'd need a marina and a half. Now, it's spread over a very large area, but that's kind of how I think about it. When it fell to 144, it didn't go to zero, it didn't go negative, and then it's increased now to 399. So the growth up has been extraordinary. And looking at the black line, you can see in 2020 what happened on both lines. In 2020, sales fell from 2019. But then 2021 was just a boom year for boating. Boating was easy to do, safe to do. It met the COVID requirements, so they were just really flying off the shelf. I'm on the board with the Northwest Marine Trade Association. We put on the Seattle Boat Show. And there was concern last year that they wouldn't have enough inventory to field that boat show. You can see that in 2022 through 6 months, through the end of June, and they're down a little bit from 2021, but not much, not as much as I had guessed, with that bump up. And what happened with that bump up is it introduced a lot of new people. Look at first-time buyers, that line was declining in terms of percentage of sales from around 35% down to about 29% just before COVID. It popped back up to 35%. And all of those new boaters were people that really haven't been in it before. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a traditional boater that was buying a new boat to replace another boater. A lot of young people. The three goals of Discover Boating was to diversify boating to young people, get more women involved in it, and get more people of color. And, depending on where you're in, are in the country, that's easier to do than in other places. So we're pretty much oriented by white males in Washington State. But the number of women that are coming in, one of the other board members on NATA is a yacht broker. She says they're just incredible. And what women want, how they want to be sold, the boats they're buying, they're different than what the men are interested in. So making sure that moves forward is a critical part of NATA and the National Marine Manufacturers Association and other groups. Next one, please. So that's the overview annually of new boats. The next one shows you what's happened to the overall inventory. And this is the top red line shows you from 2020 through 2020, that we've really been stable around 25,000 boats. Even though we've had those ups and downs of sales, the overall fleet really hasn't changed that much, which is really interesting, particularly when you look at the green line, which is sales per boats per 1,000 people. It was 4 boats per 1,000 people in 2000. It's down to 3.2 now. So there's more. We fragmented a little bit in terms of being able to maintain this sales per capita. But with the increased population, that's made up for it. That's really what's holding that there. So in terms of looking forward, this is, I guess, the question as to what happens moving forward. Next slide, please. The fleet size has remained pretty stable. I think that's probably going to be the case for some years. Boating sales obviously boomed. There are some potential headwinds. We talked about this before, aging boaters, boating boaters aging out. I've got a good friend that's 75, has a Ranger tug. He's put his boat on the boat for sale right now. Even though it's a nice, safe boat, he just doesn't want to do it anymore. So you try to figure out where the break is in the population and what happens as people get interested in doing other things. The other thing is growth in boat sharing, ownership, or clubs. And this is a critical one because the average boater across all boat sizes, small boats as well as big boats, only uses their boat 10 to 15 times a year. Mm. And so if you're a boat club and you can increase that to 50 times, then if that worked through everything, you'd need 5 times fewer slips. So it's something to keep an eye on. It's a pretty small chunk of what the ownership pattern is right now, but it's something to keep an eye on. And as I mentioned, the ability to retain these new boaters. As we drew in a lot of new people, particularly young people, the boatyards were telling me they're booming because these people don't know how to take care of their boat. They're running into things, they're grounding, and so it's creating all kinds of problems. And this is a real issue in terms of building a system that that meets the user's need from the ground up in terms of what's the best place to keep your boat, what's the best place to buy your retail supplies, what are your options for the boatyards, where should you be going, all of those things, to integrate that whole package. And I think there's some work being done with that, but it's not as good as it could be for young people, and I think that's something that needs to come forward. I think Doc Waugh is doing a good job with that, with Transient Voyage, in terms of making that transaction a little easier to do. On the supply side, the mortgage supply of marinas has not grown. We've looked at this now, I've been doing this since the 90s, and we have relatively few marinas that have gone out of business. You can look at, there's a couple operations that used to be marinas in Lake Union that are now floating homes. We work for the for the city of Marysville, with the marina there that actually had a dam that you had to get through, a dike system. That one just deteriorated and eroded, and so they keep the reservoir, but they need that for other purposes.
Paul, I'm very interested in what you're saying. Would you mind pulling the chair over?
Absolutely. Yeah. Is this going to help out?
I think so.
Yeah, thanks, Mary. Fan in here is...
Oh, I'm sorry.
Was making noises in it.
This is
that's a lot better.
Too much noise.
Yeah,
thank you. But, you know, I look at this relates to this discussion about rates, and do you have the wherewithal to rebuild the marina and continue a long period? In Washington State, obviously, we've got shoreline management plans, and those require that you have water-dependent uses. So it's not that it can be flipped completely to something else, but we're not seeing a lot of marinas leave. The only real cases that we've seen of the supply changing or increasing is reconfigurations, like when Shilshul Bay reconfigured. We're doing that work for Des Moines, for example. 2/3 of their slips are under 30 feet. They've got 20-footers, 22-footers, 24-footers. So they now are looking at a plan, if it goes forward, they're in the first part of it right now, that would have no slips under 30 feet. So it would go from 700 slips down to 500 slips. That's typically what happens. In terms of your moorage space, it stays about the same on a lineal, leasable moorage.
The boat sales reflecting that increase?
Absolutely. The fastest growth that we see in these new boat sales and used boat sales too, it's a smaller component, but it's 40 feet and over.
Oh, wow.
The brokers tell me there's just no room. In fact, that's one of the impediments to being able to sell those boats, is trying to figure out where you're going to put them. The other two things that have happened in terms of marine supply are a lot of older fish processing plants that have obviously left that service, and they've been reformed and put into mega yachts. So you've got Nautical Landing, you've got Emerald Landing, Salmon Bay, Marine Center, Ward Cove packing, all of them that are capable of 100-plus foot boats. So the upper end, and there's probably some more growth in that sector as well. And then dry stack storage. Dry stack storage, the sweet spot is somewhere around 30 feet for most of them, but they can do boats to 36 feet. And in other parts of the country, they're doing them much larger than that. They've got some systems that basically are over water, where they pull it up into a garage and then just put it down straight into the water rather than having to take it out of a building. I don't know whether you'd be able to do that here or not. But the supply hasn't grown that much, and we did some work for the Port of Bellingham on the ASB Lagoon. They were looking at building a 400, 500 slip marina in there, somewhere around that size. But that was going to cost them $60 to $70 million. And we told them we think that's really not going to fill up very fast where you are, and it's very expensive. Mm-hmm. And the rates in order to handle that would be probably prohibitive. So on the mortgage side, we're just not seeing a lot of new growth. We're seeing some reconfigurations, which decreases the number of slips, but orients towards, in the wet mortgage anyway, towards bigger boats. And I expect to happen now, as happening in other parts of the country, is that there's going to be a steady decline in the supply as older marginal marinas close. Now, the one thing that might change that is there's been a lot of sales of marinas to private equity or real estate investment trusts. And there are a number of other folks coming along now, Bob Weiss, and I forgot, Marsh McClellan, something like that's the name of his firm. Do you remember it?
Yeah.
He owns Port Hadlock and some in Eagle Harbor and Gig Harbor, and he and his wife manage those. So it's either kind of homegrown or they're going to much larger operators. Next slide. the big example here recently, I'm sorry, next one. Oh, I'm going to show it later. So this gets into rates as well in terms of what's happening as these marinas are sold. And my next slide is the one that I forget. That's okay. Let me go through this first.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. There we go. That's the one I was looking for. Elliott Bay Marina sold for $80.5 million in 2021. They've got, 1,200 slips. So in terms of looking at construction costs, we're looking at $70,000 per slip. Now, they've also got uplands, so they've got, maybe a little less than that, taking into account they've got some nice restaurants there, some office space, and a nice property. Boy, this took a long time to build, and it's in good shape. But this used to be thought of as one of the newer marinas in Puget Sound, but it was built in 1989.
Oh, wow.
So it's not brand new. We just have not had this kind of change occurring. And what happened as a result of that is that the rates in 2022 changed. They used to have a loyalty rate that if you moored with them for 6 months and you re-up for the next 6 months, that they give you a 10% discount. So for the year, for a new tenant coming in, it could be 5% lower. Mm-hmm. They increased their rates, excluding the loyalty rate, by 9 to 15%. So when you're thinking about benchmarking yourself and where you fit into what percentile you fit in, this is a new phenomenon that that may come into play more. Some of this happened because the real estate market was so poor in hotels and retail, restaurants, and office space that it drove these folks to look for other opportunities. And this firm, and there's some other big national ones like this that are acquiring firms, acquiring marinas, they're going to kind of drive what happens to the rate. They're going to set the new price leader in the rate business. So from the perspective of like the Port of Seattle, they look at Elliott Bay as their competition. They're about the same size. They're newer. They were reconfigured in 2007. So it's quite a bit newer, but this is in very good shape. So they look at that in terms of where Elliott Bay is, that's where they're thinking about being. So I understand they're looking at a pretty substantial rate, but I'm not sure they've announced that yet. Mm. Mm. If you could flip back to the slide and just kind of looked at what the, one more back. So there's three basic models that I see on this. One is basing it on competitive marina rates, which is what you're doing. And we did rate studies for Bremerton and Paulsbo and you guys here a few years ago. Always there was the requirement that they be looked at in terms of what's the region paying. Our perspective on that is that it costs the same amount of money, maybe more, to build a marina here than it does in downtown Seattle, excluding land costs. And the reason is that that's where the contractors are in many cases, so you can get that that done a lot easier. The other thing is that the O&M costs are not significantly different. They may be a little bit different, but it depends on the marina circumstances. So basing yourself on an average or a percentile of Puget Sound marinas, I think, is a good thing to do. The problem I see that you've had is that rates were so low in the region and here that as you're going up to that, stepping yourself up to that margin, you're looking at hefty increases every year. Mm-hmm. We told Des Moines, for example, that they needed to increase their rates about 20% now before they rebuilt, and then they need to be in the 90th percentile in order to be able to cover their requirements for capital. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now they're a city, so they look at it as an enterprise fund, and everything that goes into the marina, with the exception of seawall and dredging and some things like that, but all of the floats and all of the uplands related to it have to pay for itself.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So it's not just looking at are you covering O&M costs, it's looking at what's your ongoing maintenance cost and replacement cost, and making sure that you're accruing every year, you're building so that when you do need to rebuild, you have the funds to do it, because there aren't any ways to pay for this through grants. You can get grants for transient mortgage, but you really can't get them for permanent mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
You may be able to get them for restrooms or for some other components of it, but the big cost, you just don't have the capability to do. So you're in the first category, but I think you might be in the third one as well. The second one is to increase its CPI or some other index, mostly CPI, for the Seattle area. We just did a presentation at Port Edmonds, and they had agreed several years ago, 6 or 7 years ago, to do CPI plus 1%. That CPI plus 1% was not enough to cover some of their O&M costs. And all of these construction costs have been increasing annually as well. So it made it really difficult for them to do that. Now, they were constrained to 2 to 3% increases during that time period. And then, you know, right now it's 10%. So based on this formula, they would be charging an 11% increase.
Mm-hmm.
And they're considering that. I looked at averaging that over this whole time period, the 7 or 8 years, and it falls into the 3.5 to 4% per year.
Mm-hmm.
So more than inflation was during that time period, maybe not enough at that rate to cover what's happening with O&M costs. We hear insurance costs, as you were mentioning, and security costs, and payroll, and all kinds of other components that you need for the brain to operate to function properly. Those are growing faster than CPI. So the ports that have put themselves in that model of CPI plus really are questioning whether that's the way to do it. The third one is set to cover costs and your return on investment requirements to meet your demand and capital expenditures with the market comparison that also looks at ROI and finding some balance there. And I know you've got a good model set up to take a look at this in terms of how much you need to put away every year in order to accumulate the funds that you'll need to have in order to rebuild the marina.
Yep.
And that's really the way you have to look at it. Getting back to the marinas that don't do that, they're not going to have the funds to do it. They're going to implode. We've done some work for the Quileutes out in La Push, and you could see slips floating on the piling. You know, there was nothing anchoring them. They were built way too light for the kinds of boats that were using them. And we see that up and down the coast, really, particularly. And I think that's going to start happening more and more in Puget Sound as well. But I applaud the way you guys are going about it in terms of looking at, getting yourself up to that base, whatever percentile, average or percentile you are, and then taking a look at, is that what's the average after you get to that point? What sort of annual rate do you need to have in order to make sure you're covering O&M and putting enough in to do replacement? So we got a couple of examples for you here of what 2022 rates were. You guys were in the 10%+ range for both open and covered. Shilshul Bay was 5%. They were 5% the year before that, the 2 years before. Elliott Bay, as I mentioned, was 9% to 15%. Everett is really in this situation where they need to figure out how they're going to pay for it. They've got 2,000 plus slips. The North Marina is doing very well, but the Central and South Marinas need a lot of work. Edmonds did 6.5%. Cap Sandy did 3% to 7%. And Anacortes Marina, which I think is a good comp for you, is located south of Cap Sandy. It's got covered and open slips.
Mm-hmm.
They are rebuilding right now, and some of them are condo, and some of them are for lease. And they have been raising at 8% since 2017, 8% or more during that time period. And they're not having any problems filling that marina. They told me at one point that people were trying to bribe them to get on the wait list and move their way up. Especially as we look at the dearth of these larger boats, of space for them. Now,
Shilshul, though, Elliott Bay, Edmonds, and Cap Sandy, they're near the top of the market from at least our thing, too. too, so we're below average, but they're actually in the top
right
10%.
So there's two things, in my opinion. There's where you're at within the spectrum of marina rates, and you're low, and they're much higher. And then you've been raising it faster than they are, but you're still not getting up to where they are. I've got a slide that looks at that. But yeah, I mean, you're really trying to play catch-up right now. It's for historic low rates. And that's something that we see in a number of public and private marinas. And when we did the analysis, when we talked with Jim Pavarnik about it, the key thing he wanted to do was stop having a dollar per lineal foot that was the same for all boat lengths,
mm-hmm.
and to have a progressive rate. And that really makes a lot of sense, because we're talking about selling square feet. It's like any other real estate
right.
deal. And the longer the boat, the wider it is, the more
yep.
space it takes up, the bigger the fairways have to be.
Mm-hmm.
So it just kind of goes through the whole system.
Mm-hmm.
Next one. We looked at that one. And then this one I thought was interesting, just comparing for 2015 and 2022, Kingston versus Edmonds and Anacortes. So looking at an average of Anacortes and Edmonds, you were 46% lower than them in 2015. You're 25% lower now for open space, and about the same for covered, 42% lower. In 2015, 32% now. The other thing that I really see when you're talking about covered is that the margin between covered and open isn't sufficient to pay the extra cost. And there's we figured in Pierce and King counties, it accounts for, including boathouses, about 13% of the mortgage, somewhere in there 10 to 15%.
Mm.
It's a very small component. I think what you're going to see probably moving forward is that there's going to be less of that. So if you're able to keep that going, then you're going to have a more and more precious resource. You know, we're going to start seeing marinas go out completely, but we're definitely going to have some impact with coverage.
1% of our slips are covered?
Gosh, I don't know a percentage.
Let
me get it to you.
Yeah,
that would be interesting. Yeah.
There's a lot of interest in
it.
I think it's about a third.
In coverage. And in boathouses. More and more of the boathouses are charging on a per square foot basis. You know, I think even Paul's Bow and Brownsville, I think, has some too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's 60 to 70 cents per square foot. So
mm-hmm.
if you look at that, may add up to more than a lineal foot rate.
I think I had like a 40, I looked at the slip, it was 40 feet, 45 feet, and wanted 90,000 in Pulse Boat. I could buy the slip. And then I thought, well, I have a small boat, I get somebody else to do it. And then I looked at the, you know, it's like buying a house, and I can't make the rents on that.
Yeah.
That's a boat.
It was just a slip, wasn't even a boathouse, because then I asked if I could put in a boathouse to protect the boat. But they said, you can do that if you want, but the boat, you're going to get charged for the slip regardless.
Yeah.
No, with boathouses, you have the same overwater light penetration problems and all that, too.
Yeah, right. Exactly. They said you'd have
it's really complicated.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not going to get any easier, that's for sure. So marina rates, our general finding are that you've got to be able to fund your capital repair and replacement of the marina. You've got to fund other capital improvements like seawalls and breakwaters, dredging, bathrooms, and other dock improvements that are required. And operating expenses tend to go up as the marinas get older, maintenance costs go up. Costs are increasing. In-water work, permitting takes longer, costs more environmental mitigation. Demand is still strong. Wait lists really demonstrate that. There's more demand than supply. The Port of Anacortes at Camp Sandy Marina, they have a little over 1,000 slips. About 700 of them are rented out to the general public.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a wait list of 700 now.
Wow.
Yeah. So demand is very strong. I think looking at what we expect to happen with the overall fleet size, I don't think it's going to change that much. The other thing I wanted to mention, I was reading a real interesting article by McKinstry about, based upon your income group, where sales are increasing or decreasing. And we've really got a bifurcated group where the inflation and all of these cost increases are impacting the lower income people more than they are the higher income people. And so in terms of looking at that, in terms of larger boats, that's going to mitigate any kind of impact that will be. It probably will be more of a problem trying to find a place to put them. Financial capacity is limited. It really basically has to depend upon what you can generate, because there isn't going to be anybody that comes to the rescue. There may be some instances where you could get some help with a breakwater or a seawall. Des Moines, for example, got some money from the state legislature, but they had to make a good argument for it based on what was happening with the city.
Mm-hmm.
Those things are not sure. So really, the bottom line is net operating income from the marina has got to increase for the marina to be sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that you've got to continue to raise rates. And it's just a matter of finding that sweet spot, taking into account what this your stakeholders are thinking as well. I know when we've looked at that from your perspective, from almost all the marinas that we work with, Edmonds was the same. Des Moines was the same. Maybe 20-30% of the people that have boats here are live in the district. That's the same for the Port of Edmonds. It's the same for the city of Des Moines.
Mm.
You're a regional marina.
Mm-hmm.
I was telling Greg, I was sitting years ago at a meeting in Edmonds, another rate study meeting, and a couple of guys I was sitting next to said, if they raise the rates, I'm just going to Kingston. Well, now how many have you got on your wait list?
Lots.
Quite a few. We move people off, but we're moving people on. It's kind of like now we're starting to move. We had it for a long time. People didn't even get off the wait list for the most part because it was too inexpensive that no one would ever need.
Yeah.
As much aged out.
Well, it's not the best indicator of demand, but it's a decent indicator.
Yeah.
And what we find is every marina we look at has a wait list now, and particularly for those longer sizes. So that's kind of, in general, what my recommendations to you are, is that as good stewards of these beautiful assets, to have them available for the next generations of users and port commissioners and port staff, got to have some money to be able to do that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you very much. Wow. Any questions?
Can we get a copy of this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, great. Awesome.
Thank you, Paul.
This will really help.
Always a pleasure.
Well, it's my pleasure, too. I think you guys have a beautiful facility here, and just wish you the best with that.
Yeah.
Any way we can help with that, we're happy to.
We might have, so as we get in, we get a recommendation, we may have more people attending. If they want to go and talk, have them come talk again, we get more attendance at that. But, as we get closer to it, because they're all out voting.
Yes.
People affected right now.
Yeah.
So, but I think it's good just to kind of just lay some foundational work and do some more when we come up with whatever their specific recommendation might be and what's the rationale behind it, and also going forward. We did a 3-year deal, but now we have to kind of do a reset. And then, it'd be nice, I think, to have some predictability.
Every time we've done a 3-year or a 5-year, it's always undershot the mark because everyone else is raising their rates.
Yeah.
And it's tough to stay up with that.
Right.
We did one maybe 15, 20 years ago for the Port of Everett. If they wanted to have not only an annual increase, but an increase that would take care of the amount, because they didn't raise it the full rate the first time.
Right.
They wanted to make sure they left nothing on the table. But, the rates were like $2 a foot or something.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of factors that we have to take into consideration and talk about. It's going to be, I think, more than just one discussion.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I hope so.
Yeah.
It is very thought-provoking.
Well, from my perspective, any way we can help, we'd be happy. really comes down to all of these costs are increasing. That would be great if everybody are for a few months, but we still have to spend money to get the floats in.
Right.
And the lifetime that you assume that they're going to last in whatever cost recovery model you have. So all of the other costs are increasing.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, let's see here. So we did that switcheroo here. We're going to go now to a discussion regarding the Industrial Development District.
You know, so more recently, you know, we've discussed the potential of an Industrial Development District levy. And, you know, I just believe that it's just premature to even move forward at all with the recommendation regarding establishment of a levy. You know, we've got so much work ahead of us before we can even provide various alternatives. And it's not to say that we won't continue pursuing some of the alternatives for economic development or due diligence. We'll pursue the architectural, you know, design and flesh that out, because mm-hmm. that's a potential critical alternative.
Yep.
And we know that that is a potential pathway for us to be financially sustainable, but it's only one pathway, and we really haven't explored everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, also, there's a number of reasons why I don't think we should pursue it, but at this time. So, and then we don't even have audited financials for 3 years, so we can't even go to the market to look at options for how we fund it.
Oh, right.
So, yeah, and Kitsap County is just kicking off their comprehensive plan process, and we kind of need to parallel that effort,
yeah.
as well as we probably should undertake a strategic planning effort on the part of the commission
mm-hmm.
to make sure that we're providing, you know, we're following your direction and your vision. So, also, there needs to be a broad and deep public outreach effort that needs to be undertaken. And on top of that, then the market conditions are not conducive, and there's no rush to move forward. We have a lot of wood to chop, frankly, before we can even consider it. So, given that, I would like to ask the commission for your support, you know, just tabling this measure. And I don't even think we're going to pursue the due diligence and work. It doesn't mm-hmm. like it's totally mm-hmm. shelving it. I'm just saying that we're not going to pursue a levy until maybe even the very end of next year, or going really into 2024, more likely.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my ask of the Port Commission, but I'm open to suggestions, since we've talked about it before, and make sure I'm following. If you want me to keep pursuing it aggressively, I will, but I just don't see how we're going to be able to be successful, and I don't think it would be warranted at this time, for sure.
Yeah.
There's an awful lot of work to do.
Yeah. I've been thinking about this an awful lot as well, and I do feel it's really important that we continue with this architectural review, but it's also imperative as well that we don't miss the boat in relation to a potential opportunity to rezone our assets at Hill Toth and the upper parking lot as well. That is of the essence, I think, right now. We've really, really got to step up, and you can only have so many balls up in the air at one time. I feel like it's prudent to take that off the list right now. To me, it seems like.
I so appreciate Greg, you hearing our little subtle tones and realizing that we're, you know, it was a huge undertaking, and it felt like it was too rushed in the moment. We need more due diligence. We need more, and I appreciate the fact that you heard that and followed the lead.
And I think we've talked about this before, but mm-hmm. I think until we can tell and show the people of Kingston what they're getting for all of this,
yes,
it's just going to feel like grabbing. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really happy to be delayed.
Yep. That's fantastic.
That's good. I think we're all on the same page.
I think so.
So do you need an action on all that?
Did we do an
action authorizing?
We haven't done an action. We just created the
IDD, but we didn't establish an IDD, right?
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, we created the district.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the creation of the district, you know, technically, you would do that probably, could have done that 100 years ago, just so, because it's just a more of an accounting thing.
Yeah.
But actually, to even consider the creation of establishing a levy, that's a lot more work that has to really be done to do it, and transparency too, not just in word, but actually in deed.
Mm-hmm. I also think it was good about how much we've learned through this process about it and what it is, what's involved with it. And I don't think going into it, any of us really knew what was totally involved until we got into it, and then realizing, holy moly, there's a lot to this. Mm-hmm. And it takes a lot of public outreach, and it takes a lot of due diligence, and, you know, exploring other, you know, presenting the big picture. Mm-hmm. And I think we just had pieces of the picture, but not the whole picture. Mm-hmm. So I think this is a good avenue.
Thank you.
Excellent. Okay, let's see. We're on item. Take my glass off, I can see. Financial report. And here I see our report here. Oh, look at that. Wow. That's great.
Is the audio on there on the phone, or is that a public comment? It just says iPhone.
Is that Audra?
Is that you, Audra? Okay.
Apparently not.
All right. I will, so I'll do the financial report on behalf of Audra, our controller. So you'll notice the financial statements have a new format. We have updated our accounting system to match the budgeting, accounting, and reporting system, the BARS manual, in accordance with RCW 43.09.200. This will provide, number one, a uniform accounting and financial reporting to allow for meaningful use and comparison of financial data. And number two, accounting and reporting instructions as a resource for local government and managers. And three, a consistent framework for financial reporting to intended users, including managers, governing bodies, granting and regulatory agencies, the state legislature, and the general public. So they've aligned, our reporting was not really aligned with the state.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's obvious when you compare the two. So what they did was they standardized everything, and they went back 3 years. And so now everything aligns exactly how it would with an SAO audit and review and their reporting. So it's like right on. So I think it's just the right way to go, clearly, and it's it should be an expectation. But they went and did an awful lot of work, Audra and Stacy. Moving on to profit and loss. So for the month of July, the total income was $404,927. Total expenses are $245,865.
Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. So the result in net operating income, which includes depreciation, was $3,143, and net income $3,062.
Yeah.
So the year to date, our total income is $1.784 million, and our total expenses are $1.542 million, resulting in a net ordinary operating income of negative $112,878 and net income of $4,300. Because you include depreciation now, and our depreciation runs over 50,000.
Uh-huh.
So that's why it reads a little bit differently. The operating income, so parking is at $265,000, which is approximately $80,000 ahead of budget year to date. So parking is definitely bouncing back.
Yeah.
It's not quite 2019, but it's approaching 2019
results. Mm-hmm. Fuel sales are $426,015, which is approximately $40,000 lower than budget due to market price volatility and lower volume than projected. Our operating expenses, total operating expenses are below budget by $112,000 year to date, and depreciation, which is part of operating expense, is nearly $300,000 year to date, $290,000, $206,000. So other income and expenses, property tax receipts that we've collected are $125,880, and we have about $221,000 total that we collect, just as a reference.
That's so a half a year.
$26,000 out of it.
Right.
And prior months included this item in total operating income when it really should be in non-operating income. It's a property taxes. So that's a good example.
Mm-hmm.
On the balance sheet, total cash and equivalents are at $2.572 million, an increase of $421,745 year to date. So we've increased our cash reserves almost $422,000 through July. Pretty good.
That's great.
The LTGO bond has a balance of $729,500. The ending cash, if we included debt, so if we paid off our bond, we'd have $1.843 million now. We're totally net. That's money that from the board of discretionary. I hope that helps. I'm happy to answer any questions if I can. This is Auditor and Stacy's report, but I reviewed it pretty thoroughly.
Yeah.
So what does prior year to date actual mean?
So that was what we had for 2021. That was the actual numbers for 2021.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Year to date, right. Yeah. And then this second sheet here is the bars.
The second sheet is our cash reserves as we track it.
Oh, I see.
And so then you can kind of see where we're at. Now we're at $2.572 million on the far right in the bright green column.
Okay, right.
That last spreadsheet.
Right.
So the thing, what's deceiving is that when you roll depreciation in, so from a managerial standpoint, not from an accounting standpoint, but just from a management standpoint, I don't really include depreciation. I usually try to look at how much cash we have, mm-hmm. and then I look and we'll compare that to our cash flow model and what we project as cash needs years ahead.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how, as we, and then what we'll have to do is project how much profitability and net operating income we'll have. But that's why that number keeps building in cash reserves, even though we look like we're losing money when we include depreciation.
Ah, right. Yeah.
So, I like this layout.
Yeah. I hope I think it's useful to get last year, this year, budget. And I really want to thank Audra and Stacy. I can't really give it enough, verbally. I can't just articulate how really amazing their work is and the amount of work and effort and knowledge it took to go back 3 years, redo everything, and get it so an auditable form with SAO. Mm-hmm. They've been working really closely with the state auditor's office, mm-hmm. and it's really fantastic. Plus, I think they've just done a lot of things which are going to have resulted in recovering funds that we have due us. And you'll see some of that. They only really only accrue it and put it in there once we receive it, but they've already done a lot of work to try to recover significant funds, maybe $150,000 looking ahead. You'll see that coming. Some of that might go directly into our income statement, but some you'll see it on the balance sheet and our cash reserves. Really amazing work. Just awesome.
Awesome. Excellent. Any other questions on the financial report?
No, but after we've looked at it for a while, I'm sure we will.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, we're off to item 9, which is an additional public comment session. Put my glasses on so I can see. We've got someone on an iPhone.
And he's muted.
Okay, and then
that's it.
Ron and Rita both dropped off.
Is that? Oh, okay. So.
Oh, they just unmuted. Yeah.
Okay.
This is Mr. Hitchman from Lot 12 A and B.
Mr. Hitchman, how are you doing?
Pretty good. I'm in Hawaii.
Oh my gosh. How many hours ahead are you?
3 hours behind.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Right.
It's 4:30 here.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's happy hour, if I'm not mistaken.
I'd like to congratulate Mary for making the voters pamphlet in the congressional district number 7 in Seattle.
Making what?
The voters pamphlet.
Oh. Yeah.
What were you in the voters pamphlet for, Mary?
My step grandson ran for Senate.
Really?
And I endorsed him.
Oh,
because I am extremely proud that this 29-year-old man has decided to do something about it rather than just bitch.
Aww.
And so.
That's great.
Congratulations, Mary.
Yeah. I mean, what did he get? 1/3% of the votes.
Oh, right. Yeah.
It doesn't really matter, but. His attitude is he's learning. He ran for city council last year, and he's learning what it's all about so that by the time he's 40, he'll be able to make a difference.
Good for him. Yeah.
That's excellent. Wow. Very cool.
Wow. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, Mr. Hitchman, do you have anything for the good of the order? Or that was great. Thanks for pointing that
Thank
out.
Thank you.
Well, actually, I was, this is really off the wall, folks, and you can treat it just like that if you want, but I was looking at, there was some rigmarole regarding your assets having to be, viable is not the right word, but up to snuff at the state level, and, I just dawned on me that maybe a great contribution by the port to the community would be to purchase that old Smiley Hotel area and tear it down and build something proper there. I know it's for a private individual, it would require bringing it up to code, which is why it's lying vacant now. But maybe the port could do something about it. That's all.
Very good. Okay.
It's an interesting idea, Mr.
Yeah,
Mitchell.
We can entertain that. Take a look. Very good. Thank you so much.
Most welcome. Thank you.
We don't have anyone else on there, do we? Okay. All right. So we'll get into commissioner reports. Item 10.
I don't have a report this month. Next.
Mary?
I don't either.
Okay. I have not much, actually, but I do want to report and maybe just send something out in the universe in relation to the Kingston Public Market, which has done very well, I think, this year. And I want to take my hat off to Ray and the staff for helping with little foibly things that happen there. I've been down there almost every week. I know Mary has as well. And I just wanted to put that in the record that we really, really appreciate the port staff helping when there's funny little things that happen, which happens all the time. So thank you, Ray.
Well, I know the folks at the market totally appreciate the sense they have that they can turn to Ray and his folks when they need some.
Yep, absolutely. And I'll put a plug in for something that's going to be really fun on Sunday. There is the dog days that my dearest wife, Sally, has put together. And I think it's going to be really a lot of fun. There is a dog agility group that will be at the port from 10:30 to 12:30, I think is the timing. And just encourage everyone to come down if you like dogs and like to watch some agility in action. It's going to be fun, I think. So, and that's all I've got.
So I do have one thing. Wanted to mention the salmon derby, the fishing derby.
Yeah.
September 24th, correct?
Correct, yep.
And sign-ups are online. I think they still have some openings, is what I understand.
Not very many. Yeah.
Not very many. Ooh, yeah. They're getting close.
Yeah.
They're only going to take in 150 participants. So
yeah.
If you haven't signed up, you should sign up now.
It's a coho derby, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Cool.
And there are prizes.
I guess I do want to just share something okay. that I'm doing. And I'm not doing this with my port hat on because you talked about it. But I do think it's important. I'm contacting all of the the owners of significant parcels in Kingston
mm-hmm.
to get their take on are there any incentives that would spur mixed use?
Mm-hmm.
And my hope is that essentially it creates some conversation among those owners, not just about that, but about a lot of other things about the future of Kingston.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll keep you aware of what's going on.
Yeah. Oh, yep. That's great.
It's a pretty awesome. Wild mix of characters.
Yeah. That's, yeah, that is a truism.
Yes. Not true,
is it? Oh, okay. All right. Off to staff reports then.
Ray, you want us to kick off?
Sure. Thanks for that about the public market. It's been really a lot of fun working with them this year. There's a lot of great vendors. Everybody seems to be resonant with them. You talk to them, a lot of them. They're all really doing very well. You know, all the people that are showing up, and plus, I hate to say it for the people that have to catch that gosh darn ferry, but when you got a 3-hour layover, people are actually standing around spending money at the public market, which is a good thing. I mean, I'm just saying, yeah. It starts out really good on the weekends for that ferry, gosh darn ferry, and you start out with two ferries, and all of a sudden, 9 o'clock, you're down to one, and everybody's just hanging out. So it's just, it is what it is.
Yeah.
It's going to be a lot of fun this week. I've been really looking forward to this with Steve's wife, Sally. When she told me about this months and months ago, I was trying to get it out there as many people as I can for the dogs, because you know how we all love animals or explore things, and that's for sure. So this will be a whole lot of fun, and we'll get that taken care of this weekend, so that'll be nice. We did have something fun happen this past weekend, Saturdays, that we got to work with Argosy. I always get that name wrong, but it's Argosy. They had their nice big 86-foot boat out at the end of the guest dock out there multiple times, picking up people for events, and just a door that I think we've opened up now to try to relate and work with them as far as getting more people to come here using that basis, that touring basis as far as that goes. So it's going to be a lot of exciting times for that. And I want to thank Chris here for helping Tori and I. We're going to a PCC meeting in Anacortes in October from 11th through the 14th. She got hooked up with separate hotel rooms. So, oh, there's Mr. Strickland. Yay. Hi, Ed.
Yeah.
So that'll be a lot of fun. A lot of good players will be there, and we're going to get a good tour in the facilities there as well. We just got some busy weekends coming up in September and October. This weekend, like I said, it's going to be a little slow, and then it starts taking off again after that. We do have staff members that will be taking vacations coming up. So if you don't see somebody around, it's just because they decided to take a few days off. That's all I got. If I could take anything else, I'll let you know. Thank you.
So, Ray, I just wanted to tell you how much the Yacht Club appreciates and how you and the partnership that you have with them in terms of attracting other yacht clubs to come down. Mm-hmm. That whole deal with the Everett people was a great example. And yeah, so I just wanted to.
Thank you. I'll pass it on my staff as well.
Tori? Yeah. Thanks, Paul. And thank you for the approving of the air conditioning upgrades. We can feel it here. It's time. So thanks for letting us move forward with that. As far as maintenance report, some of the projects have slowed down a little bit. I'm short one FTE until October. So that really has split my time between inside, outside, both of them are great. Like doing both of them. It's just a matter of me disciplining myself and get outside again and get my hands dirty. So doing what I like to do out there. Department of Ecology's underground tank inspection. I gave you a quick blurb on their wants and needs. They've extended our deadline until January 31st, 2023. So really not much into 2023. I was hoping for first quarter, but we can move forward, talk to Greg and Audra and Stacy, and we'll move forward with repairs to the underground tanks, the fill and max and the spill buckets that we need to do. I do need to review the quote yet with their with SME, the contractor. Mm-hmm. There's a few things that I'd like to talk to them a little more in detail about as far as move-in prices and the price per construction cone on their quote seems a little high. We have construction cones they all donate at their own prices. We can take care of some of the barricades and things like that. So I want to comb through the quote. I'm not ready to accept it yet. Al and I had an inspection, a voluntary inspection that invited a new Al and I rep for the area to come through the court. Did a walkthrough with them and found a couple things. The same week, we had the fire marshal come through. So it's been just about 90 days of just been inspection on top of inspection. They were both, or all three of them, were really positive with just a few things to fix. I'm waiting for their respective written reports. A lot of this is just verbal and notes that we talked about during those inspections, but I'm going to wait for the report to really get into the weeds on some of them. The one major issue that did come up was the second permanent exit in the office upstairs. Mm. The L&I rep thinks we need one. The fire marshal wants to see why. So he doesn't. Fire marshal doesn't see it quite the same way that the L&I inspector saw it. But we're going to wait for the final report and see where the research lands as far as putting a permanent second exit in the office.
Oh, wow. Wow. Okay.
That was, kind of a curveball on that end. Was expecting a couple other hits that didn't get hit, and good. But it was a good learning experience on my part as far as Al and I, used to Coast Guard inspections and all of that, and then to bring it up to the building and facilities is a good learning experience. Mm. That's pretty much it. We're just maintaining, and we got our normal work list of stuff, and our day-to-day repairs, and quote-unquote fires to put out. But yeah, those are the things that we stay on top of. So.
Great.
Second exit. That's quite a just a good point. How do you do that?
I kind of thought he was joking at first, so I threw a couple scenarios like the fire pole and then spiral staircase out of Audra's office.
Window?
So,
ladder?
Well,
you
do
could
have
do
that.
A little,
I showed him the fire escape ladder, or emergency escape ladder, and our the plan to get rid of the window and go out either the roof of Greg and Audra's windows on the roof and then down the ladder, or out the conference room with the ladder that we keep under the sink. Great for emergency exits. But we need a permanent, possibly need a permanent second exit.
Oh, gosh, wow.
28 inches at the handrails, which would, because we're at second level handrails, all of a sudden the verbiage starts to say you need a door and proper steps. That's not the brass fire pole, no spiral staircase.
That's really interesting because, I mean, they inspected our business too, and they didn't say that.
Yeah, and I'm hoping as we're waiting for this final paperwork to come through or the written report that they're doing some research in the office.
Right.
Putting their heads together collectively saying, yeah, I see your point, but is what I'm hoping we get out of the final report. So.
The complex I'm in, there's only one business that has a second exit, and that's Napa.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
And then it comes out of the head.
Don't have high, you know, steep steps to get up and down.
So it's quite a drop in the back
of
the building.
It is a drop out the windows if we would have to go out a window onto a roof.
The L&I rep explained it that it's a head count, what it's capacity.
Yeah.
So that's where the fire marshal stepped back and wanted the square footage. So I sent them pictures and blueprints, which were real easy to get. I really thought I was going to look for weeks for the blueprints, but they were indexed. That was a really quick research piece on my part. Sent them the blueprints so he could figure out square footage. And that's where he stepped back and said, well, let's see what the L&I guy says, or what their report says, because when I do my math, you're okay.
Oh.
It's a head count, square footage, and then hours of occupancy. Like, how long is that head count there?
Oh, okay. Right.
Because, so the conference room isn't very big, so you can't have 15 people in there. So that's not a question, but it's full-time head count for the workday.
Right.
And so I'm anxious to see the final report, just to see where it stands. I'm hoping it. They've done their due diligence and considered all the aspects.
Thanks for that.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I would like to welcome Chris Williams. I think this is your first commission meeting, Chris, our new administrative services manager. Let's give her a hand.
Thank you.
So, Chris, we wish you a lot. You don't have to say anything, but if you have anything,
Helping with the audit that's upcoming. We'll be looking at, I believe, October, November. So just helping Stacy and Audrey get prepared for that, going through some HR files, making sure those are all up to date, have all the necessary data. Trying to get up to speed on everything else. So
all at once.
It's been fun so far. So yeah, really looking forward to it.
Welcome.
Thank you.
You know, sometimes I have to send in material, timesheets. Could we get just a list of who does what?
Okay, sure.
That would be very helpful. Greg, would you send this to so-and-so or whoever's supposed to get it?
We do have a group message, so that'll be helpful. So you can just send it there, and then everybody who needs it can get it.
Yeah.
And there's no deciphering where it needs to go.
I thought you did it.
Yeah, exactly.
I only have a couple things really before that. So, we talked about at the beginning of the year, hey, are we reaching out and making sure that we're discussing things with our partner agencies? So I did meet with North Kitsap Fire Department, Rick, the Assistant Chief, Rick LaGrandier, and we just kind of went over, what their program is, what we're doing, basically sat down, kind of had coffee, and he interviewed me and had a bunch of questions for me about some of the things, what they can do. They're going out for a levy this year, and they're going to start really doing a lot of outreach, I think pretty aggressively short order here. The chamber is, I think they're just doing better and better. I think they have a pretty successful wine walk, and I think they're making money off of that. As part of the effort of outreach, I met with the Wash State Ferries. I talked with John Bazina and then also David Sowers, as well as the overall terminal manager. And then Leonard Smith came out, and we did a walkthrough to site a kiosk for the chamber, but also we just talked about overall operation with the state ferries. And then we talked about, our staff really, that we all know each other, I think, on the ground out here. But I said, hey, let's have some formal, make sure that we're talking and have our emergency preparedness that integrates with one another. So we went over a number of different issues. But anyway, it was great to have Leonard. We talked about the overall operation of the ferries and, all of our trials and tribulations in this environment, but they're doing really well. Kitsap Transit, they came out and they did a walkthrough and did an audit of the utilities, and that seemed to come out clean from their contractor. So we're all in agreement about what utilities are, they're exclusive to the Kitsap Transit. So I think that was a good thing. We moved that forward. Positive note. Then the port right now, is, as the commissioners, as you just discussed, the comprehensive plan is due, I didn't write down the date, but we're full-fledged. I think it's October 15th that it's due, that we have to submit at least. And so we're going to get all placeholder for just any consideration we have. Obviously, the rezoning for our properties, which is overdue for probably a couple decades or whenever we acquired those, yeah. Including the boat, our parking area where the all the boat ramp where they park at. Mm-hmm. So we're undertaking kind of a thorough review of that, and that goes over whether it's the comp plan, looking at the design standards, and then you got to really get into the code and the use tables, but every aspect of it. And so if anybody has any comments, please send them to us. If you have some thoughts about the area or the community or things that you've had over the years that haven't got addressed, this is an important time to get our bite of the apple. It just has to at least get tabled, and then we'll flesh it out over the coming year. So that's about it. And I want to thank, we had a lot of people get sick, including myself, and I want to thank everybody. So like when I was out and I was out sick, everybody stepped up and really helped cover all the bases. And then when we had a few people out on the weekend, and like Joe Crow took in Rose, did just an amazing job covering the fuel dock on on weekends, which are super busy,
yeah.
And covering the front desk and helping cover for other people while we're all kind of recovering. And so, but I also want to thank them personally for when I was out too, including Ray and Tori and Audra and Stacy, everybody. So they just did a great job and kept me informed too, even though I was not very functional.
Growing a beard.
I think I kind of remember what they told me. But I just really want to thank them. They just did a great job.
That's great.
And Mark too. Mark was doing an awesome job that weekend. So thank you.
Excellent. Well, we're getting down to that. I think, is there anything else for the good of the order? We'll go on to announcing our next regular meeting, which is Wednesday, September 28th at 1 p.m. It's a hybrid meeting, and the location is...
the Yacht Club.
Oh, it is?
I think we're going to do the Yacht Club again. I think we can book it. It sounded like they had one. We moved from last, so next week we would have in trouble, but this week we're okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll double check on that.
Yeah.
That's
why on the 31st it was supposed to be the Village Green, because there was a conflict. And so by moving it up a week.
Yeah. Oh, right.
That's
where that happened. Right. Gotcha. Okay, and I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved. Second.
Very good. All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Excellent. We are adjourned.